I'd like to speak with you after class, just to find out how things are going.
Okay, everybody, sports, let me know when I should begin. Now, everyone's having this already, or this is coming in at the end? Oh, that's good, okay, excellent. Okay. All right, we have everybody. By the way, I added a little bit of a supplement, but I only was able to make 5 copies of some supplementary materials that I may refer to. I may refer to some materials that are not in the handout. I apologize for that. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Yonah Reis. I am Musmach of the Yeshiva and the director of the Beis Din of America, which is the Beis Din that is affiliated with the Rabbinical Council of America, with the Orthodox Union. I suppose there's a loose connection with Yeshiva University as well. The Yadin Yadin program at Yeshiva is kind of a training ground for Dayanim at the Beis Din of America. I learned in the Yadin Yadin Kollel. My Chavrus in the Yadin Yadin Kollel, Rabbi Rapha, also serves as a dayan at the Beis Din of America, and we hope that the current trainees, present company included, will also follow a similar track and be able to assist us in our work at the Beis Din of America. In the course of my work at the Beis Din, one of the types of issues that we deal with are gittin, where we officiate gittin, Jewish divorces between husbands and wives in the Jewish community who get divorced and have to do a get. And we also coordinate dinei Torah, meaning the adjudication of monetary disputes between people. Those can be commercial disputes, those can be community disputes, those can also be matrimonial disputes. In this sense, the issue of the ksuva, on some level, fuses the function of the Beis Din as a religious body that officiates and supervises gittin, with the function of the Beis Din as an arbitration tribunal that adjudicates monetary matters, because ksuva certainly relates to the end of the marriage, it relates to a get, and it also relates the monetary disposition of a divorce. And the question is, how does the ksuva as a monetary document really come into play bisman hazeh? Everybody knows, we pass like Rabbi Meir, that also shows Misha Sha'achas li ksuva, that you're not allowed, ksuva's been involved, you're not allowed to live with your wife for one second without having a ksuva, that it's absolutely essential to have a ksuva. We paskin that way. The question is, what type of monetary reassurance, what type of comfort does the ksuva really provide that it is such an important document? I received a correspondence in February of 2000 from Rabbi Shon Rifkin, Shav Refuah Shleima, who's the chief rabbi of St. Louis, who actually had worked at the Beis Din of America for a number of years, and he asked me a very simple question. He said, you know, it doesn't come up so often, but every now and then he has to figure out how much is the value of a ksuva. If somebody wants to collect a ksuva, the ksuva says that upon death or divorce, the wife is entitled to a certain sum of money. And we have these funny ancient coins, zuzim, skukim, that are described in the ksuva. And how do you value them? What are they worth? How do we apply this halacha l'maisa? Now, coming from somebody of that rabbinic ilk, it tells you something about how often or how commonplace that the actual application of the ksuva must be. Because here's somebody who worked in a beis din for many years, a distinguished rabbi, he's asking the question. It's not pashut at all. And at that point in time, I did some research just to endeavor to figure out, for our own purposes, we should really have an official valuation of the ksuva. I wrote him a nice 3-page letter at the time, discussing the various shitos. I subsequently, about 2 years later, turned that letter into a more extensive piece, because the president of the board of the Beis Din told me I need to send out some fundraising letter, and I need something that we published recently, so can you give me something? So I took that piece and I developed it into a longer essay. And then one of the other Chaveri, Bezdin, who also is a graduate of the Yadin Kol Yeshiva, Rabbi Michael Boyd, suggested that we take my piece and combine to do a more extensive article together for the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society on the value of the Ksuva, which we published in the spring of 2004. So everything here took 2 years. Eventually, since if you publish something, you may as well get the maximum mileage out of it. Eventually, we published it in Tehillim as well, a Hebrew version of some additional slants and insights in the Hebrew language version, which you have in your materials, in Tehillim, in which we analyze and examine some of these issues relating to the valuation of the ksuba. The first question to ask, really, just as a dollars and cents, nuts and bolts kind of thing, is, okay, so what are you getting yourself into when you get married and you have this document signed? You make a kinyan, and so you're assuming all the obligations of this document, even if you don't sign it yourself, you're assuming all the obligations. How much are you getting yourself into? Secondly, practically speaking, is it something which is ever going to be relevant? Are you ever going to have to, does anybody ever have to pay this this sum? And if so, how much do they pay? And if it's not relevant, why is it not relevant? Practically speaking, how are these matters resolved if it's not relevant? What are some of the various applications in terms of the enforceability of the document, both in Beis Din and, for that matter, from a secular court perspective? Are we dealing with a document which is an enforceable document that you need to be concerned that somebody could take you not only to Beis Din, they could take you to secular court to enforce this document? And what are some of the other modern-day applications, you know, of the ksuba? So, to start off, let's just talk about, since this may have some bearing on how we value the amounts in the ksuba, we'll start off with the question of whether is the ksuba deraisa or the rabbanon? So this is the machlokas rishonim, the pasuk in this week's parsha. It's Parshas Mishpatim. It's also Parshas Shkalim, right? So it also very relevant for all these discussions of valuing coins. So a person seduces a woman, lass, right? So he has to take her in for a wife, and there isn't a desire for that, he does have to pay the amount of money, the same amount of money that is the knas for raping a woman, right? And the Gemara says, and the Torah says, Kimar HaBisulos. So Rashi says on Kimar HaBisulos, and Mahor Yim Harena, Lo Isha, Yifsak Lo Kimar Kimishpatish Lishto, what is this Moar HaBisulos, right? So he has to give her a dowry or an amount of money, which is the amount that a normal husband would have to give to a wife. And he writes her a ksuba and he has to marry her. So Rashi clearly understands that this notion that the Torah is referring to, Kimara Bisulos, means when we say Bisulto Da in a ksuba, that this is a dinda araisa, that a basula is entitled to a ksuba. It seems from Rashi that even the amount that we write in, which is 50 shkalim, 200 zuz, it's 50 shkalim, the 4 zuzim in a shekel. So the amount that that we would write in the ksuba is also mandated on a araisa level. This is a Torah law. And Rashi writes next, Dibamachlo kemar besulo shukatsuv chamishim kesef. That's the amount which is established by the Torah with respect to one who rapes a woman, which is 50 shkalim. So this is a Torah-mandated obligation of the ksuba, right? It happens that the Ramban, right there, we don't have it quoted, says he disagrees with Rashi, because we know, he says, from various gemaras, we'll see a couple in just a second, the ksuba is only midrabanan. that the Gemara seems to indicate very clearly that it's a takana sofrim, that shlote kala beina v'hotziya, a person should not lightly discharge his wife. He should have some kind of discouragement, some kind of negative incentive against doing that. So therefore, the Chachamim established the Ksuva, but that indicates Gemara in Yevamos, Peites, indicates that this is the Tam, it's a Takanas Chachamim. Similarly, take a look in the materials, Ksuva, Staf, Yunam, and Aleph, Itmam, Rav Nachman, Mashmu, Mashim, Rav Yishim, and Elazar, Chachamim, Tiknu, Lehem, and Nos Yisrael, V'suma, Masayim, Amon, Amon. So it's very clearly, this is a Takanas Chachamim, that the Besula gets Masayim Zuz, and Amon gets Mone Zuz, and the Gemara goes on to say a few lines later, that as a result of that, that's why when a woman comes to collect a ksuba, if there are three types of property that the man has, he has the best type, and beinonis, mediocre, and zibayrus, the worst type, she only gets zibayrus. Why? Because it's only at takanas chachamim. And then there's one shita's tonight. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, who says Ksuvas Isha min haTorah, that Ksuvas Isha is from the Torah, and he quotes the pasuk basically that Rashi commented upon, indicating his acquiescence with this view, right? That Ksuvas Isha is min haTorah. Says Kesev Yishkal Kemo Abesulos Sheizek Kemo Yer Abesulos. Continuation: the Gemara says that this brisa, even though at first glance it seems the Tanakhama seems to not be Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, really is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and this is the basis for his shita that Ksuvas Isha is min haTorah. So how do we paskin? So Tosfos over here says that from Rav Nachman that we have at the beginning of the Amud, it appears that Ksuvas is the Rabbanon, and in fact it appears that way close to Gemara in Yevamos as well. Because the Gemara in Yevamos talking about a woman who thinks that her husband is dead, right? He went to Medina Sayyam, he didn't come back, she figures he's dead, she married somebody else. We say, Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh Belo Ksuva. So the Gemara says, why is Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh Belo Ksuva? The Gemara says, because Sakina Lavabanim Ksuva Shlo Teikala Beinov Lehotziah. Chachamim established a ksuva so that her husband would not so quickly get rid of his wife, but this is a wife we want to get rid of, right? Because she married Beisa, so we want to get rid of her, so she's not entitled to a ksuva. The clear indication is that it's a takanas chachamim. So I'm a stomach, the shah, stomach, the ksuva, the rabbanon, right? So the Tosfos asks, but he has a kasha. What's the kasha? Because if you look at our standard form ksuva, we have one here, right? It was, I think it's in the materials, last page of the materials, perfect. The last page of the Ksuvos of the material says, "V'yavina," the sixth line or so, seventh line, "V'yavina l'chi mor b'sulaychi." Right, I'm going to give you the mor that you're entitled to. Kesef zuzi masan dechazi lichi midaraisa. You're entitled to midaraisa. So if Ksuvos is only the rabbanon, why do we say dechazi lichi midaraisa, indicating that it's daraisa? So Tosfos answers, "V'yomer Rabbeinu Tam v'samchim Rabbi Shimon Gamliel." So Rabbeinu Tam's answer is because we're samechem Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Who says clearly, right, that in our Gemara, the Ksuv is deraisa, a few lines down, and we paskin, we have a general principle, general rule of klolim in the Gemara is that if you follow the klolim blindly, you'll almost always be wrong, halacha l'maise, but we do have a klal that says, kaimalank Rav Shimon Gamliel Mishnatenu, that if Rav Shimon Gamliel says something in Mishnah, the halacha is like him, and again, the Reona Merid Lo Kaimak Rav Nachman that we find elsewhere, he brings a raya that we don't paskin like Rav Nachman. We don't have the certain chazaka, the Enadam Tarek Vesuda Mafsida, which is based on the premise Ksuv is the Rabbanan, and we see elsewhere that we don't that Rav Ashi doesn't hold by that chazaka. So that would indicate that we don't hold like Rav Nachman who holds the Ksuv is the Rabbanan, but rather Ksuv is the Raisa. We have a good kasha. What do we do with the Gemara in Yevamos? That the Gemara in Yevamos seems to indicate clearly that it's a takanas rabbanon, a takanas chacham. My time a takino rabbanon ksuba. So haki peirusha. What it means is you have to fetch a little bit. My time a takino rabbanon ksuba. Heka the takino. Why is it the chacham made a takana during for those occasions where it's only a takana? Normally it's not a takana. It's a din daraisa. But in certain occasions it's only a takana. Namely, if you're dealing with a non besula, right? It's not Mora Besulos. The Torah says Mora Besulos. If I have somebody who's not a Besulos, say she's an Almana, so then it's not Daraisa. So why did the Chachamim make a Takana for those people who are, for whom it would not be Daraisa? Kigon be Almana, Shlote Kala Beinav Lehotzia. So, in those instances where the Chachamim made a takanas ksuva for someone who's not entitled to a midaraita, like an amana, it was made shalte kal beinav lautzia, in order that the person not to precipitously divorce his wife. Right? We have a general. We have general laws that are enacted, Laman Benos Yisrael, that to protect a woman from being divorced too precipitously from a marriage, according to the Sefer HaChinuch. That's why we have the institution of a get. Why did the Torah require a get? So a person would have to go through a whole process, get a sofer, bezdin, and whatever, you know, and make sure that everything is done properly. It'll take a little while to get everyone together. So by then, maybe he'll change his mind. So if the marriage is a good marriage, he won't so quickly divorce his wife. That's the reason why, according to the Sefer Chinuch, that's the time of mitzvah for a get. So here, shalotei kal beinav leotzia, that a husband should not too quickly divorce his wife. This is all fine and good, right, in a regime where the wives don't want to get divorced, right? So hachinami tzakinu shelo yehelak, they should take kal beinav leotzia. So therefore, this is in those cases. That's why they made the takanas. That shita's Tosfos that it's there really is the right there. Machlokas Rav Nachman Amashmuel quotes Mishum Rishim and Elazar, and then you have the shita's Rav Mishum Ben Gamliel that indicates that the ksuba is the right. Rav Nachman indicates the ksuba is the rabbanon. Okay, then you have the Ran at the end of. At the end of Ksuvos, the very last piece in all of Masechet on the Rif, right? Linyan Halacha, this is the last bold face, the word in the pages of the Rif. You have the Linyan Halacha, what does he say? Kai Malan, Ki Rabbanon, we paskin against our Shimon Gamliel, but like the Chachamim, the Ksuvos, and like Rav Nachman, the Ksuvos Ishim and Divraim, it's only a din, the Rabbanon, okay? As we say, Kamash Kotze Rif, the Shalom, the Sigin, the Kuli, Kamud HaHachi, the Aminin HaHachi, Reduch Tatuva, normally, if we're dealing with kulos, that's because something is only a derabanan. For aminanami, my time at the tikno abanan ksuva brings the raya from the gemara in Yevamos. For all the yachin rabim halacha karabim, and also Hashem Gamliel is a das yachin and the halachas like rabim, right? Aye, what about the principle? The apagat dam rabbi yochan and the komakom shishana Hashem Gamliel mishnatein halacha kemoisa. Lo sam skinu ho klo the amarayinu. Aliva the Rabbi Yochanan, Machlokas Amarayim, Aliva the Rabbi Yochanan, whether that's a true principle or not, Kedisi B'duch Tatuva, so we don't worry about that. Okay, the Den Klal Abdafkahu. The Lo Amin Alokim Rabbi Shem Gumim Le'ela Adika Taima. We paskin like him. Yeah, when he's right, we paskin like him. Hilta Chani the Kasi Kesu Zuzi Masim the Chasu Lichim Midoraisa. So what then do we do with the Lashon of the Ksuva? He says, what about those people who write in the Ksuva? They say the chazi lichi midaraisa tusu. It's a mistake. The midaraisa lochazi lamidia lamidrabbanan because she's not entitled to anything midaraisa. It's only midrabbanan. Hilchak ain't a gove klumi karak ksuva. Let me takanas chachamim gove reisha medina. B'makom she'ain kaisin mehecha shekasla reisha mabeah stam gove kamabeah yotze makom ksuva. Normally she would get. The 200 zuz, and if you write just a stam matbeah, she get like whatever matbeah would be in that particular makom. Our minhag is, of course, he writes explicitly matzayim zuz, but it's all takanas rabbanan, and it's a toast. He says it would be a toast to say dechazi lichi mida araisa, because it's not mida araisa. So according to the Ran, ksuvah is rabbanan, and you should not write in the text. The chazi lichi mi daraisa. So now the question is, so how do we paskin? So api pashas we paskin that it is mi darabanan. Okay. So if we paskin that it is mi darabanan, then what then is the justification for the fact that we say the chazi lichi mi daraisa? Okay. So here you have the Rosh. So the Rosh. Second. Okay. So the Rosh in Masechet Ksuvos says the Perakav Sim Yates. This is taken from the Bar-Ilan CD-ROM, so you only need the part that's important. For Isi Meforshim, the Afilu, Hirgilu Likto, the Chazi Lichim Midaraisa, even if you write the Chazi Lichim Midaraisa, Modu the Ksiva Ksuvos Isha the Rabban. That there would be an agreement that Ksuvas Isha is really midrabbanan. V'chachamim, so why then do you say midaraisa? It means like this. V'chachamim tikna kamishim kesef midaraisa. The Chachamim made a takana that the measurement of the kesef should be daraisa measurements. Daraisa measurements means like kesef tzuri, it's eight times more than Kesef Medina. It means that we measure the value of the Zuzim and the Shkalim and the Ksuba in accordance with the highest possible value. Perish Mishkalim Amurim B'Torah. Why? Mishum shall take Kalabain of Laotzia. We have the most expensive coin so that she not be Kalabain of Laotzia. Vasmachua Koran. The Koran is in Asmachta, Kimara, Besulos. Nigi Nigi Limaktov, the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa. So that's why we write the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa. Shelo Yitar, Adam Lomar, Kimin de Mirabanan, Hilo Tigbe, Elanun, Sela Medina. So that people shouldn't think that we're dealing with 50 shkalim that are valued as shkalim of Medina, which is 1/8 the value of Kesef Tzuri. Udvarim shel tamein, mekosef kesef zuzi masum dechazi lichi lo hifsi. But nonetheless, since it's not really deraisa, you don't have to absolutely write deraisa. If you didn't write deraisa, it's not the end of the world. But that is the explanation as to why we write dechazi lichi mi deraisa. So then the question is, the Rama writes that we write dechazi lichi mi deraisa. Where's this Rama? This is Shulchan Aruch Sham, page 6, in Sif Vav, right? It says like this. Okay. So the Mechaber is of the opinion that the Zuzim are Zuzim, even that not only is the Ksuba Midrabanan, but the Zuzim are Midrabanan as well. So the Ramah says, Chozer das Ksas HaPaskim Shesfirlu Shiksuba Besula Einarak Zuzi Midrabanan, in which case it comes out to 1/8 the value of Zuzim Midaraisa. And then he goes, and then through the third line of Eladas Yesh Paiskim, Masayim Shabasula Mana Shalamana Misharim Bezuzi de Araisa. That we do evaluate both of them in terms of Zuzim Mida Araisa, Ushmone Pam Yoise, which is 8 times more, Bechavakasa, the Chay Naga, the Ksav, Ksuva, the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa, and that's why we write the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa, Vyesham, the Kosvin, the Chazi Lichi Stama, the Minog, what's the Minog? The Minog is Liksav, the Besula, the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa, for Besula we write the Chazi Lichi Mida Araisa, about Loli Omana. But for Nomana, we don't write Midaraisa. Bottom line, we say the Chazi Lichi Midaraisa, but what we mean by that is that they get the Zuzi de Araisa, that it's valued in terms of Zuzim de Araisa. Now, the Ramah has two Yeshomim, is at the very end over here. Or he has a Yeshomim, then he has Behaminog. The question is there a distinction between the Yeshomim and the Behaminog? The Yeshomim says that we give the Araisa Zuzim for both the Almana and the Besula. The minog is that we write midaraisa for the besula, but not for the almana. So does that mean that the almana gets valued, that the zuzim for the almana gets valued in terms of the rabbanan zuzim, kesef medina, and that the zuzim for the besula gets valued in terms of the araisa zuzim? So that's the way the Beis Shmuel understands the minog. The Beis Shmuel, in fact, writes that the besula gets valued in terms of the araisa zuzim, and the almana gets valued in terms of the rabbanan zuzim, so that it comes out that an almana, who's getting only 100 zuz instead of 200 zuz anyway, is also getting it in 1/8 of the value, so that an almana is getting 1/16 of what a besula is getting, according to the Beis Shmuel's understanding. Others like Rabbi Kiva Eger, I believe the Gur as well, say no. It just means the Ramah's not arguing what he said previously. They both get zuzim mi daraisa, but the minhag is that we use the word daraisa with respect to a besula. We don't use it with respect to an almana. You can understand very well. The Torah says kimora besulos, so it makes sense to say daraisa with respect to a besula more than it does with respect to an almana. There's another reason as well. It may make sense. Because now those Mordechai, at the end of Ksuvos, has yet another pshara based on Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi seems to indicate that both Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim who argue with him are both of the opinion that Ksuvos is Deoraisa. So the Yerushalmi says, so what's going on over here? So, because the Gemara in so many places, indicates that it's really a Takanas Chachamim, so Tekala Bein of Lotzia and so forth. But it seems that there's no machlokas tanaim. Everybody holds it's deraisa. The Gos Mordechai gives a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. He says that everybody agrees. I mean, deraisa. There's such a thing as kamara pesula. Such a thing as ksuva. How much? The fact that there's 200 zuz, or how much money we're going to establish that the ksuva is worth. So that's a din derabanan. So the midaraisa does make sense. There really is from the for a besula. There really is a din daraisa that she's entitled to a besula. It was left to the chachamim to determine how much. So how much she gets, that's a din darabanan. That it's not the chamishim shekel. That's only a din daraisa for onis mefate. But to establish that this should be the amount for a besula, for a besula and a besula. So that's a din darabanan. That's the pshara that he asked. You understand that? If you follow that pshara. So you understand why it would make sense, even if we're following the same coinage, not distinguish between the why we would distinguish and say mida araisa the chazi lichin mida araisa for a besula, but not for an almana. How much is this? So we've established that let's say it's a din d'rabbanan. What's the nafka mina? It's a din d'rabbanan. Nafka mina that if she wants to collect, she can collect from Zibari, she can't collect from Beinonis. If it'll be a din d'oraisa, she'll probably be able to collect from Beinonis. Okay, so it's a din d'rabbanan. But she's still entitled to kesef mida araisa. So how much is 200? How much is 200 zuzim? How much is the ksuvah give you? Well, the ksuvah gives her 200 zuzim, but there's also a notion of tosefes ksuvah. So Tosefes Ksuva means that a husband certainly isn't a din d'oraisa. He can add to the amount that he's going to give her in the Ksuva. Strictly speaking, this was based on the notion that a wife would bring in certain assets. She'd bring in certain clothing, certain furniture, certain jewelry, whatever she would bring into the marriage. So that would be assessed by the husband that if they ever should get divorced, he would have to pay her that amount, kind of in the category of Nechsei Tzon Basel. He's responsible for precisely the value of these amounts of items that she brings in. So they would give a value in the ksuva for this extra amount. So the maisa, even if she doesn't bring in anything in value in particular to the marriage, the minhag is that is brought down Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Shmuel, the minhag Ashkenazim is that every single husband agrees that he's going to pay a certain amount above and beyond the ikar ksuva of Masayim Zuz, and that amount is Masayim Zukukim. So now we have two amounts that the husband's responsible for. He's responsible for Masayim Zuz, and he's responsible for Masayim Zukukim, right? Yeah, look in the Lashon of the Ksuva. Lashon of the Ksuva says, V'hosif lan min hakol, everything that she's brought into the marriage, hakol kibbe alav, chasim denai memeya zukukim keser tzaref. Then it says, V'tzavi chasim denai mehosif lan min dileo meya zukukim keser. What we have in the Ksuva is one of the early matching programs. If she brings in Meir Zekukim, so he matches it. With another Meir Zekukim, you get Masayim Zekukim, right? Hakineg and Sachal call Masayim Zekukim Keset Tzor. So the minhag is that for an Omana, we distinguish, and an Omana gets how much? She gets a total of 100 Zekukim. So the Basula gets 200 Zekukim, and an Omana gets 100 Zekukim. What's the Zekukim? What's the Zuz? What is all this? All right. So looking at a Zuz, we already have certain standards as to how we value currency. We know that there are 192 putos in a zuz. How do we know that? Because that's established in the Gemara and Kiddushin Daf Yud Beis. Rashi over there makes all the calculations for you. There's five or six different coins. You do all of the relationships between them. You end up with like a shminis of an iser, or maybe a sixth of an iser. No, it's an eighth in this case, a sixth in that case. It comes out to 192 putos. For a zuz or a dina, okay? Which means that if I'm dealing with a shekel, for example, I'm going to end up with 768 putos for a shekel. If I'm going to value silver, I value it on the basis of putos. How do I know how much a puta is worth? Well, I know that a puta equals a half of a barley grain. Okay, so one puta is a half of a barley grain. So if I put a barley grain on one side of the scale and I put silver on the other side of the scale, so the amount that will exactly balance with a half of a grain of barley, that's going to be a puta. All right, so it comes out that what? That one whole barley grain is going to be two putas, right? So if I have one zuz, for example, which is 768 putos, that's going to be 384 barley grains, right? If I have five shtalim, okay, which is made up of what of If it's something like 3,840 putas, that's going to be 1,920 barley grain. So this is an issue with respect to pidyon habein. If you want to value how much silver do you need for pidyon habein, I know that I need 5 grams, I need 5 shkolim of silver, so you put 1,920 barley grains on one side of the scale, and whatever you come up with on the other side of the scale, so that's going to be the amount of silver that you need in order to have 5 shkolim. And they figured out that basically the Chazon Ish has this, and there are different, you see in the materials, people actually, the poskim actually took barley grains and tried to measure the barley grains. And the question is what barley grains are you dealing with? They weigh different amounts in the winter than in the summer, when they're a little bit moist and a little bit dry. So they try to find, there were big grains, there were small grains, you try to find medium grains. So based on finding the perfect barley grain, the perfect medium barley grain, I think the Chazon Ish comes out that there were 20 barley grains in a gram of silver, right? So if there are 20 barley grains in a gram of silver, so that comes out to about 19 grams in a shekel, okay? It's going to come out to about 19 grams in a shekel if you have plus maybe a little bit, right? So that's the basis for the notion that 5 shkolim comes out to 96 grams of silver, which you find in the Chazon Ish and you find elsewhere. The Stipler has in his Midos v'Shiurei Torah that 5 shkolim would be 96 grams of silver. Now, if you take a look in the Beis Avi, the Tshuva of the Beis Avi that I have in the materials, so Yitzchak Libes, so he says that when he did the evaluation, he came up to only about 19 barley grams. Sometimes he came up with 18 barley grams, depending on the season, in a gram of silver, and sometimes he came up with 20 barley grams in about a gram of silver. So therefore, he made up sure to be 19 barley grains in a gram of silver. So if you have 19 barley grains in a gram of silver, then you come out to about 20 grams in a shekel, okay, or about 100 grams of silver in 5 shekels. So this is the source as to why, for pinyon habein, some amachmets have 100 grams or 101 grams of silver based on different measurements of the barley grains. Okay. Now, if you now this tells you how much 5 shkolim is. The amount of the ksuva we establish is 50 shkolim. So if you want to figure out masayim zuz, so all you have to do is multiply that amount by 100. So. I think I have a page here, I don't know if you printed it out, where we took a look at the current value of silver on the market as of February 16th. Do you have that in the materials? I think I gave it. It's like a one-page printout. If not, I'll try to read it for you. It's from my notes. Didn't make it. Didn't make it somehow. All right. Odd. All right, be it as it may. All right, so so right now, silver is up to $9.38 per a troy ounce. Okay, so if you do the conversions, basically 1 troy ounce equals 31.1 grams. Okay. Were the same as 1.097 regular United States ounces, all right? Now, on the basis of these calculations, if I know, let's say I'm assuming that I have 100 grams, right? I'll take the most chomerdik shita as to how much you can fit into how many barley grains that say that there are 19 barley grains that make up a pruta, right? So then the 5 shkolim say would be about 100 grams, right? So if 5 shkolim are 100 grams, 100 grams is about 3.21 troy ounces. If a troy ounce is $9.38, so it comes out that 100 grams is about $30.15. So the general amount for pidyon habein today would be about $30.15, okay? Again, the amount of the ksuva, so you just take that and you multiply it by 10. So the Masayim Zuz, Shuotei Kalabein of Lohosia, a woman would be entitled to the grand total of about $300, okay? For the Masayim Zuz of the ksuva, if we're just going to evaluate it based on simple dollars and cents, so she gets $300, okay? That's and a namona, we get 1/16 of that. I think you're below $20 already in terms of what the Aman is going to get for her mayor zuz. Yeah.
When you get the price of silver, do you look it up if you want to buy it in a month from now, in 2 months from now?
You look it up if you want to buy it right now. You value it. So there's a little bit of discussion about this. The Sefer Pesachei Choshen and the Beis Din of Rabbani in Israel, they assume as a double pashut that you value the ksuva on the day of the piron, meaning that when is the wife entitled to the ksuva? On the day that her husband dies, the day that her husband divorces her. So on that date, you look at what the value of the of silver is on that date.
Walk into a store and buy silver that particular.
Right. Now, that's right. Now, the Chazon Ish, in the materials that I have duplicated for you, claims that you also have to take into account the silver on the market, how much of it is pure silver, since, you know, the Chazal's amounts are based on pure silver, and how much of it, you know, may be a little bit corroded, or a little bit impure, and you have to add, if there's any kind of impurity in the silver, it's not 100% pure, say it's 90% pure, so then you'd have to add another 10%. If there are costs, just market costs in terms of being able to go out, you have to pay a certain amount of trading costs, transaction costs to acquire the silver, so you have to add that into account as well in terms of factoring in the amount. I have seen this quote, I saw a safe quote in the Sefer Nisun Tilchasim, I saw a safe quote in the Sefer Pesachei Choshen. When you see the various discussions among Batei Din applying these measures halacha lemaise, I'm not under the impression that this particular chumrah of the Chazon Ish that says you have to add these extra amounts necessarily is taken into account. It gets a little bit, you know, complicated. It is what it is. The Chazon Ish says that at least in his time he was told. I don't know what it is today. He was told that there was sort of a 16% impurity in silver, so you'd have to add like an extra 16%, and then he had a certain cost to whatever the again, this would be variable, whatever the transaction cost of actually being able to obtain the silver would be. So according to the Chazon Ish, you would have to add those costs into the amount as well. But for purposes of simplicity, I am not going to add those amounts as well, but it's important to bear in mind that that is the Shita of Chazon Ish, and it is quoted in a number of the Svarim on the subject. So again, it would come out that the Iker Aksuva Masayim Zuz would be this amount. It's also consistent with the the Shulchan Aruch and Yoredei Sim Shin Hei, which deals separately with the notion of how you calculate the Zuzim for Pidyon HaBein. There are many different coins that have existed over the centuries. One type of coin that existed in the time of the Ramah, this is a coin that had many different forms and values in different countries at different times, so it's difficult to pin down. But the Ramah refers to it as a draham. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I think I am. It's Dal Rei Shehei Mem Sofit. And the Shulchan Aruch writes in Shimon Shinei Sif Aleph, the five shkolim, it comes out to about 30 draham, approximately. Some have a chumrah to treat as 31.5 draham, but assuming that it's 30 draham, it would come out that one draham is measured at 3.2 grams. So it would come out that that 30 drahams would be approximately 96 grams. So there's an independent source that seems to corroborate the measurements based on the Sa'oros and the Prutos that was arrived at by the Chazon Ish and others, that the five shkolim would come out to approximately 96 grams. There's a shita that says that a draham is actually 31.5 drahams, which could be about 101 grams. So that's the source of the chumrah that some have, that the pidyon habein money should be worth the five shkolim for pidyon habein should be worth 101 grams. That's why you have the range between 96 grams and 101 grams. It's the tshuva by Rav Avadya Yosef and Yechavi Das, Chelek Dalet, if anyone wants to, you know, look further into, and it's a good safe to save opinion of Ben Gilchoso, if someone wants to look further into these values, opinion of Ben purposes. I mean, it's interesting because once you have this information, you could do a lot with it, right? Once I know, for example, that I know that five shkolim is worth 3,840 putos, and I know that it's worth about $30 nowadays, right? So that teaches me that a pruta nowadays is worth less than a penny. Not by much. But you basically divide 3,000 by 3,840. So you come up with a little bit less than a penny. It would also come out that for those of you who are getting ready for Tainus Esther, and trying to calculate machasis shekel, according to, you know, those poskim who say that in addition to giving 3 half coins of the medina that you live in, you should also make sure to give a total value of what a machasis shekel would really be. So a machasis shekel would be essentially 1/10 of 5 shekels, so it would come out to about $3. Machasis shekel would be about $3 bisman hazeh, based on the current value of silver. So it enables you to do all these interesting types of calculations. So this gives us basically what the Masayim Zuz are. But what do I do with the Masayim Zukukim? What are Masayim Zukukim? So here you have a big mishmash of views. Nobody seems to be in agreement on exactly what the value is of a Zukuk. A Zukuk, it's a Zukuk, silver coinage. I have no idea what it is. It's a Zukuk. There's a tremendous range of different opinions. So the Gra in Hilchos Pidyon Aben Siman Shin Hey basically quotes in the Ma'aril that it's worth 15 shkolim. That one zakuk is 15 shkolim. So 200 zakukim would be 3,000 shkolim, right? It'd be 3,000 shkolim. So if I say that the 5 shkolim is about 96 grams of silver, right? And 50 shkolim is about 960 grams of silver. So basically, I would take 5 grams of silver. Say this is how the Chazon Ish does it. The Chazon Ish, I'm going to read the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, okay, Chazon Ish says. Umevua behagra siman shin hey dehano again litzav ksuas besulam masayim zukim akavano lezakuk harishayim. Their reference is, just read one for me. The reference is lezakukim harishayim shekol zakuk tes zayin luke sevenim some masayim zakukim shloshes alafim slayim, that they come that it comes out to 3,000 shkolim. Every single zakuk is well, it comes out to 15 shkolim. So therefore, Masayim Zukukim is 3,000 shkolim. Shehem tuf reish pam shel pinyon habein, which is 600 times pinyon habein. So if pinyon habein is 96 grams, and you multiply, 96 grams by 600, shitzai ba gram olak suas Masayim Zukukim chamishim v'shivas lovim v'sheish meas gram kesetzav. It comes out to 57,600 grams, which is equivalent to 57.6 kilograms. So according to the Chazon Ish, the amount of, based on the graph, it would come out that the amount of the ksuva from Masayim Zukukim is 57.6 kilograms, and if you wanted to figure out how much you owe, you would factor in 57.6 kilograms. Now, that's the Chazon Ish Shita. That's on the high end, it seems, of the various shitas. You also have the shita which is quoted by Shail Teshuvah's Beis Avi, which we have towards the back here.
It's earlier.
All right, so the Beis Avi is before the Chazon Ish. The Beis Avi, on which page do I want to refer to here? In the Sif Dalid, that's where he has his own test of the barley grains, where he came out to about 19 1/9 barley grain per 9 barley grains per puta, by the way. And then on the sixth page, page 16, he has the Shita Sagra, which is the Shita Sachazan Ish, but then he has after the Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. The zakuk mea dinarim, according to Rabbeinu Tam, zakuk is 25 shkolim, mea dinarim, all right? And that's consistent with what the Beis Shmuel says, she zakuk kumo alitra, the litra is 25 shkolim. So then it would come out that that if you added all of the, that it would come out if you had 30 shkolim, I'm sorry, if you have 25 shkolim per zakuk, so then 200 zakukim, according to Rabbeinu Tam, are going to be 5,000 shkolim, or 1,000 times pidyon habein. So if it's 1,000 times pidyon habein, so according to him, nowadays it would be worth what? It would be worth about $30,000. According to the Chazon Ish, if I have 57.6 kilograms, it comes out to about $17,370. Okay, I did the calculations beforehand to save us a little bit of time. What are the other shitas? So Rav Moshe writes in Eben Ezra Siman Sadi Al Sadi Beis. We'll take a look at it inside soon. But Rav Moshe writes that he has some sort of tradition. It's not clear based on what. Where he just writes that each zakuk is a half a pound. So 200 zakukin would be 100 pounds of silver. So according to 100 pounds of silver is about 45.5 kilograms. According to Rav Moshe, 100 pounds of silver would come out nowadays to $13,723. So he'd be about $3,500 or so less than the Chazon Ish in terms of valuing the Ksuba Bizman Hazeh. Now, Rav Chaim Nor, who is notorious for those of you who keep track of Sukkot's time, right, to measure your hadassim and everything else. So Rav Chaim Nor always has the shortest possible shiur. So Rav Chaim Nor really has a pretty low shiur over here as well. He claims that Masayim Zakukim Kesef comes out to approximately 3.85 kilograms. 3.85 kilograms, that's not, too much more than it's just a few times more, basically, than the 50 shkalim altogether. 50 shkalim is essentially what? It's essentially 960 kilograms. So this is basically about four times the amount of the value of the ksuva itself. So it comes out to, right now, the value would be $1,160. The Nachla Shiva has a shita where it would come out that the total value is about, write down the Nachla Shiva's value, with 200 zukukim, basically, according to the Nachla Shiva, are worth approximately 500 zuzim, according to the Nachla Shiva. So it's about 2.5 times the value of the ksuva, according to the Nachla Shiva. If you add together the Tosefes ksuva, according to the Nachla Shiva, and the Iker of the ksuva, it comes out to about the same amount as Rav Chaim Nor. So both of those shitas I think they're based on the same principles. The total amount, even if you add the Masayim Zakukim and the Masayim Zuz, it would come out to about $1,160. Okay, so you have the tremendous range that if you're going to follow the most the strictest possible reading of what Zakukim are, you're going to end up with a tiny paltry amount, which is not going to lead somebody to view their wife as Shlote Kala Bein of Lotzia. Or you could take the Rabbeinu Tam amount, which would come out to about $30,000 if I'm valuing Masayim Zakukim. So Lemaise, what is it? What do you do? How do you put it all together? There's a separate question as to whether you value the Masayim Zakukim separately from the Masayim Zuz. If Masayim Zakukim is worth $3,000 shkalim, right? According to the Chazon Ish, and the ksuva is worth 50 shkalim, so it may not even pay anymore to take the Masayim Zuz into account. It could be that the intention of the Masayim Zakukim is just to subsume everything. So that's the Beis Shmuel that's in the materials. So the Beis Shmuel is of the opinion that once a husband is obligating himself to the Masayim Zakukim, he no longer is obligating himself to the Masayim Zuz at all. He's only obligating himself to the Masayim Zakukim, and therefore he's off the hook with respect to any extra payment amount. If you hold a very small amount, like the Rav Chaim Nor, the Nachla Shiva, so then it makes sense to not forfeit the Iker Ksuva, because the Iker Ksuva is worth one-third of the Tosefes Ksuva, the Masayim Zakukim. So then it makes more sense to factor in the Masayim Zuz into account. And some claim that it depends on the Nusach of the Ksuva. If the Ksuva makes it clear that the Masayim Zakukim are separate from the Masayim Zuz, then we ignore the Beis Shmuel and we say, we look at what the document says. The document lists them as two separate amounts, so we view them as two separate amounts. Halacha l'maise, if push comes to shove, I don't think, given that the value of the Ksuva itself that we're talking about is $300, it's not going to make a large practical difference whether I add the Iker Ksuva or I don't add the Iker Ksuva in terms of how I'm going to value the Ksuva at the end of the day. But the question is, if you're pushed into a situation where you got to do something, so which of these figures do you choose? So there's another interesting approach, which is found in the Beis Avi and which is followed in a recent Psak Din of the Beis and Rabbanim Nitzah by Rav Duchovsky, who we'll see has very entertaining shitas on this whole subject matter. And that is the notion that what did the forget about the Messiah Skukim Kesef for a second. Okay, maybe it's worth 3.85 kilograms, maybe 57.6 kilograms of silver, maybe 45.5 kilograms of silver. At the end of the day, is that really going to be enough? Well, maybe according to the Chazon Ish, maybe according to Rabbeinu Tam, that it's worth, according to Rabbeinu Tam, what? According to Rabbeinu Tam, that it would come out to about $30,000, because every single zakuk is 25 shloim, so maybe, that's a substantial amount, $30,000. Even $30,000, bisman hazeh, is not necessarily such a large amount. So the Beis Avi, I take a look at, hold on, let me find the right place in the tshuva. Okay, base. The base and the base avi. Okay. The time of Sarin Rabban and Zakino Ksuva, who could they shlo take Kalabain of the Garsha Gedisa Bigamara. It's established why we have a Ksuva, Bixel shlo take Kalabain of the Elsia. And even Bixel the Chayra, the Sikkim of Ksuva, who God like a day kach, that the amount of the Ksuva has to be the amount, regardless of the actual coins that are written into the document, Kadesh shlo ye Kal, the Garsha, so that it will not be light for the husband to divorce his wife. The Gami through the parashas of Asav Maseches Peah, Shekasav that the Hasikum shall Masayim Zuz the Ksuva Hu Kedei Shetucha Lispanes Bisukum Zeh Lashana. That it says very clearly in the Mishnah in Maseches Peah, right? That the amount of Masayim Zuz, that's the amount which you're not entitled to tzedakah if a person has at least Masayim Zuz. Why is that? Because the assumption is, if they have Masayim Zuz, they'll be able to sustain themselves for at least 1 year, get themselves back on their feet. They don't need to take tzedakah money. Kitishlot yistarek lekabla min tzedakah. Harei, there ain't no sikum pot. So, forgetting about the 200 sukukim, we see the 200 zuz itself, which is the yikar deraisa amount, the yikar takanas to abundant amount, is intended to serve a purpose. That is not a small amount, but it's supposed to be enough to supply somebody with food and clothing for a full year. Okay? Ulam, Isib Rivash. However, he does acknowledge that he saw in the Rivash, who asked the same question, is the husband going to be hesitant to divorce his wife because of Masayim Zuz? Because of the Nira Bezer, to be a man, are you a Nira Bezer? He says, no, it doesn't matter so much because this amount was established at that point in time because they were very poor, and even Masayim Zuz meant a lot for people who were very poor. Masayim Zuz are Ya'etzlam Sikum Gadol, the Hagun, and Masayim Zuz for them was a very large amount and an appropriate amount. So it sounds like that the Sikum Maksuva does not need to be that much because it was designed and geared towards people who are very poor. And according to the Rivash, that was the amount that was established. So that remains the amount, even if the Tam might be Batel, Bizman Azeh, that would still be an appropriate amount. However, there is this Svar thrown out by the Beis Avi, who, by the way, was the Rav Yitzchak Libes, was the Abezdin of the Igud HaRabban. And he has this notion in his tshuvos that you don't find necessarily so readily until recently. I'll show you a recent psak din that mentions it, but he really was in the minority to introduce this notion that you would base the ksuva on a Masayim Zuz extrapolated amount of how much would be necessary to sustain somebody during the course of a year, and this minog actually caught on. In some of the Bate Din in the New York area, Yitzchak Libes had tremendous influence. I sat in a Din Torah just a few years ago at Igud HaRabbanim, which is, of course, his organization. Rav Yehuda Libes was Nifter, and now Rav Kurzweil is the Abezdin of Igud HaRabbanim. And I had a chance to discuss these inyanim with Rabbi Kurzweil, who told me that this was, in fact, the approach of Igud HaRabbanim. I'm not holding him to it, but this is what he told me, that they viewed the appropriate amount for Ksuva to be tied in to what would be an appropriate support amount for a year. And go to the last page of the Beis Avi, page 17 of the materials, in the bottom of the page, L'chein L'dina, Nira L'finias Daiti, after he quotes all the different views, and if you... You know, I've introduced grams and drahams and putos and zakukim, but if you really want to have your head spin, you can read this entire tshuva. L'chein l'dina nira l'fiyani yizdaiti, shekashi l'shar erach haksuva, It's very difficult to evaluate. B'sikin kol kach gadol she'olah l'dinim raisi. Yeah, he brings like the most humble view, namely of Rabbeinu Tam. B'sikin kol kach gadol she'olah l'chem dola k'malksuas bito she'nagdimim megoyan she'elf alfei dinari zav revuah b'shas suva sein emes l'mashik asamnu le'el. But then he adds in, hein emes l'fimashik asamnu le'el she'kesef haksuva yisikim shel parnasa l'shana tamima. That the appropriate amount for the ksuva really is that it's supposed to be parnasa for one full year. But he just says that you have to then calculate, the amounts of the silver values could go in either direction. That based on the value of silver at any given point in time, they could end up being too low, they could end up being too high. Let's say the value of silver, instead of being $9 an ounce, becomes $50 an ounce. It might be outrageous. So therefore, on that basis, we would have to reject any calculations that would be too high or too low. It should be within the range of what would be a parnasa shana. Now, Rav Moshe doesn't seem to adopt this notion of parnasa shana, but he has a similar type notion. If you take a look in the excerpt from the Igros Moshe, let me find. Okay. So Rav Moshe writes that there was a minhag where he grew up in, was raised in Russia, in his town, where they would calculate the amount of 200 sukukim, basically as 75 rubles. 75 rubles, Rav Moshe writes, and I don't know what the exchange charts are for rubles. But Rav Moshe writes that it would come out to, in his day, when he was writing this, about 20 years ago, I guess he wrote this this particular tshuva. This was written Tavshin Mem, okay, about 25 years ago. So he writes that 75 rubles would come out to about $40. So he advocates that maybe the notion of 75 rubles is no longer a good idea. And he says that really, even though it was 200 sukukim, basically what would happen from community to community, his community was Roselands, which I always thought was a suburb in New Jersey or something. But he says this was the minhag was that they would take certain amounts that they would consider to be appropriate amounts. They weren't necessarily tied in to the strict value of 200 sukukim, and the implication is that it was an amount that worked in order to establish the standard of Shalote Kala Be'enav Lehotzia. Start with the second line. The Me'achar Shehu, second line, Av Shekosvin, fourth but word into the line. Av Shekosvin, this is page 9. Av Shekosvin, it's page 9, paragraph beginning of Al Kosav Agra. Av Shekosvin, Masayim Skukim Ketzitzor, Shu Habi Yaiter, from whatever the minhag had become, the Me'achar Shu Akol Panim, Tzach Gadol, as long as they established the minhag for an amount that was a large amount, Shlotei Kaila Lehotziah, Lochashu Aloshim Masayim Zukukim Kesef Sarf, they didn't worry so much about whether it met the strict parameters of Masayim Zukukim Kesef Sarf. The Kahai Gavna, Adaita the Minhaga Azlinen. Vizel Mashim Komosenu Mea Kisrim, Berosland, Kodim HaMacham Olamis Avishayim, before World War I. Shitzkila Vishnas Tofrei Shayin Dalet, for those of you who just don't have your history books available, Yugarvin Lebesula, Hamisha Vishivim Rubel, they would collect 75 rubles. Shayu Tofkov Gildan, that were of course 500 Gildan. Shizea Yatagum Shel Zahubim, Vigildon Echara Yatof were 15 kopecks. Shahayu Meir Berubel, there are some of the exchange charts there. There were 15 kopecks, there were 100 kopecks in a rubel. Mishum Shahayu Sak Godolin Otsos Kolodim Tzachov, because this was considered a sufficiently high number for the hotels for people to attend to their needs. Shulamacho Luxus Vladiva, for food, he has clothing and also shelter. Even though as time went on, it wasn't as much. It was still a chashuv amount. So Yishayach is chashuv is elimon and megarishin, that it would prevent people from expeditiously divorcing. L'stam in shishen and mashirim, for most people who are not very wealthy.
$41 is only worth $41. The klum, it's not worth anything. The Noam Migereshin wouldn't stop anyone from divorcing, right? You know, you see signs in Washington Heights, you know, quick divorce, $41, everyone will run in. Wouldn't stop even a very poor person, even $200. You'd still, you know, get a good clientele if you hung up your shingle. Nobody would be able to sustain themselves from this amount. Only for a small amount of time. So if it's only going to, if it's just a tiny amount, that a person's only going to lose sustenance for a tiny amount of time, it's not going to stop anyone from divorcing. Therefore, we should go back to the original amount of calculating the real value of 200 zakukim. It was worth more than INA ruble. Therefore, we now that 75 rubles is no longer worth that much, we should go back to the 200 zakukim. If the amount otherwise would not be enough to prevent people from precipitously divorcing, it should be masayim zakukim. And that's why even when we weren't strictly speaking collecting the zakukim, it still was there in the text. So that it would protect women during those times, that the other amounts that that would follow the minhag would not be enough. And this amount of 200 zakukim, of course, is 200 pounds of pure silver. And this amount should apply even for an almana. Of course, he has almana yibugamayaskun kesetzov. Then, of course, it would be 50 pounds of silver as opposed to 100 pounds of silver. But this would still be the calculation. So, Rav Moshe, even though he doesn't tie in his analysis of the Mishnah and Peah, nonetheless makes it very clear that the intention of all the amounts, even the amounts that were added to the strict amount of the ksuva, were intended to cover people so that there'd be a reasonable amount of support for food, clothing, and shelter based on the amount in the ksuva, and this is why the 75 rubles were no longer considered to be accepted by him. So therefore, this is sort of the idea behind it is along the same lines. As a, yes?
What would prevent a bad husband from just saying kimli like Reb Chaim Noah?
Nothing, as we'll see in a moment. So technically speaking, the only technical issue with respect to Rav Moshe is nobody knows exactly how he got his half a pound. I have lost the new handouts that I supplied for today. I just want one copy, if I can just have it in front of me. I'm sorry, I apologize. So I just found, you know, Rav Schechter has in his Ikve Yatzon just sort of a technical mathematical question of Rav Moshe, because he sat there and did the actual calculations. Said when he did the calculations, it kind of came out like the Chazon Ish, and not like Rav Moshe. Wait, do I have it? I thought I made the copy. Yeah, here it is. Adash Shivoy Demei Ksuva says, look in the Gra. The Gra figures out that one Zakuk is 15 Sloyim. That's three times the amount of Pidyon Abay, and the Chazon Ish established it's 96 grams. So if you add it up, it turns out every single Zakuk is 288 grams. So Zakayim Zakukim Kesef turns out to be 57,600 grams. Whoever typeset it didn't notice that the numbers switched in the process, but 57,600 grams. Then he converts the grams into ounces and the ounces into pounds. So it comes out to 127 pounds. So a dayan sarachi and cheshvan agonim aligus moshe. So if that's the case, how does the Rav Moshe end up with 100 pounds instead of 127 pounds, which is consistent with the Chazon Ish shita? So it's not clear. Rav Moshe doesn't really explain exactly where he got the half pound amount from, but it's not too far removed from the Chazon Ish amount. As we saw, you know, nowadays the Chazanish would be 17,000, Moshe would be 13,000, and he doesn't provide us with a benefit with rounding off, or this is also a Kabbalah that he had, that every single zakuk is half a pound, but be it as it may, so at least the conceptual analysis of Rav Moshe, we see it's consistent with the one raised by the Beis Avi, based on the Mishnah in Peah. Now, the most recent authority to utilize this analysis is Rav Duchovsky in a Psak Din that he issued recently. This is in the materials, in the regular materials. It's a Psak Din from when? It's a pretty recent Psak Din. It's Rav Amar sitting on Rav Ezra Bashalom, Rav Yosef's son-in-law, from February 22nd, 2005. Right, very beautiful case, as always. Husband's married to two women. The second wife is deemed to have accepted her situation because the wife is being divorced as wife number two, so therefore she can't complain, he's a bigamist, because, you know, as, you know, Groucho Marx said, you know, it's, sure, I'm a bigamist, you know, bigger you, bigger me, it's bigger all of me, so, bigger all of us. So, she participated in bigamy, you know. So they established that she was obligated, that she couldn't claim that his bad behavior didn't entitle him to get rid of her, so she had to accept the get. And then the question was, how much should the ksuva be? So if you look on page 2, first Duchovsky establishes that she's such an exemplary character herself. That's the first few paragraphs, and then he raises sort of a in Vav, in paragraph Vav, he raises the following possibility of this. You have to figure out the exact amount. 200 zuz. But this is parallel to the halacha mufia b'mishnah b'sof maseches peah. Shemishi yesh lo 200 zuz lo yutul min estaka. Somebody who has 200 zuz should not take staka. Meaning why? Because they have harash mishans perish. Why? Sham she 200 zuz hey masikam shalim zakuk lo upon us of memetzek shana. That's the amount a person needs to sustain himself a full year. So chazam asul nachan shisha lachat peidos mi baila lo telat lachzol apsochem. The idea was that the woman should be able to have a year to get back on her feet and not to go back groveling for food. She should have a minimal standard of living to be able to sustain herself for 1 year. This is the yisod of ishuk ikar ksuba. Mishum kach, yesh l'dayti, likvoa sikume minimum, that there should be a minimum amount, a maximum of ksuba, and a maximum amount. Biskashe v'ashavat sakiyam shal isha l'acha yiparzim yibaylo, if yimamat sakayim shayisum agelsim yisulim. Based on the standard of living of the parties when they were married. Minimum, the parnasa chutshi tukava oinish al bitach halumi, he ties it into bitach halumi. The alkein aisi masiv is a sikam achotshi al 3,000 to 4,000 shekel achotishim, 36,000 to 48,000 shekel lashonim. This is about a year ago. What was the conversion rate then? About 3 shekelim to a dollar, 4 shekelim to a dollar? 4.5 shekelim to a dollar. So this wasn't coming out to too much anyway. So he was saying, unless you think that the idea behind this was that he was saying, no, give them much more. The idea was, no, give, make sure that we not have chazon ishiyorim here, but rather it should be just the minimal standard of living. The standard of living, you have to realize, in Israel is unfortunately much lower than the standard of living over here. So therefore, it comes out to a maximum, the minimum would be about $12,000 a year. That would be the minimum. If the dafe oyon, the maximum you see covered sikum chotshi shall 10,000 chotshi, 120,000 shekel v'chishu shnasi would come out to about $30,000 or more, akin to hushita. It would be more akin to Rabbeinu Tam shita, right? Kol ksuva be'arakavo yotzei nekshav zayt v'ksuva mugzemes. But anything which is more than that amount, he would consider to be a ksuva mugzemes. He would consider to be an exaggerated amount, meaning an amount that he would not take seriously. In terms of actual application of the amount as well. Now, in a prior decision of the Beis Din Rabbani that I have republished here, which is Piskei Din Rabbani Chelek Yud Aleph Amud Shin Samach Beis, you have a basic machlokas between a panel of the Beis Din Agadol in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Kapach on the one hand, and Rabbi Mordechai Elio on the other, where basically they quote the various shitas. Take a look at page, well, this is page 22. So you take a look at Machlokes Os Gimel, right? Machlokes by Chorin, Ma'al Shiva Shemasayim Skukim Kasif, how you evaluate it. Afyos V'yad Ba'al Ashtar HaTachtoina, since the one who wants to enforce the ksuba, namely the woman, has the lower hand, right? So therefore he passes like the Nachla Shiva that should be basically 2.5 kilograms. The Hainu Sach Me'a Elef Lira at the time. L'dasa Miut, and the Dasa Miut, which is from Mordechai Elio, is no. What are you talking about? He says, take a look at the way that the classical Mepharshim evaluated it. Who 57.6 kilograms, like the Chazanish, which is based on the Vilna Gaon, which is based on prior Shitos. So this is something, this is already a classical view. It's not, you can't say, oh, the Nachla Shiva came along, and therefore, since I happen to have another view, that's another Das Yaka, says it's much less, so I go with that view. No, we have a classical view to rely upon. Shekhan Kiyom would be, again, the conversion doesn't matter what it comes out to. We did it in dollars and cents for today. So the main view that's espoused by the majority of the Beis Din is the notion, not quite of Kimli, but similar to Kimli, about Yad Ba'al Ashtar HaTachtona, that you get, since there are conflicting amounts, the best that you can assert is the lowest possible amount for a woman who wants to collect her ksuva. So therefore, that's all that she's entitled to, is the least possible amount, according to Rabbi Yosef and according to Rabbi Yosef Kapach. Now, in Israel, it happens that many people have the minug of writing in addition to the Ikka Ksuva and the Tosefes Ksuva, they write in, you know, plus 50, you know, million shkolim or something like that. So the question is that a collectible amount when you write a real amount in the Ksuva that is not, you know, tied into some esoteric silver or coinage of Zukukim or Zuzim, but you have an actual amount of modern-day shkolim, or if especially if you write modern-day dolarim, you could really be in trouble. If you wrote, like, 50 years ago, 50 million liras, it's probably worth less than a pruta today. But if you're writing, you know, $5 million or something like that, then you can get yourself, you know, you can get yourself into trouble. So this is why Rav Duchovsky recommends strongly against people doing that. And he has, I got a hold of the essay that he wrote on the subject. I actually heard him present this at the conference of Dayonim in Eretz Yisrael a few years ago. So he actually got up and he made a little presentation about this. There's a further complication just in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't apply to America. Well, actually it does to some degree. I take that back. And that complication is that most people, when they have their divorces, they end up going to secular court. Or even if they go to Beis Din, the bat they did in Eretz Yisrael are bound to follow the secular law. In other words, there's actually a chok Knesset that requires the bat they did to follow the secular law when they divide the assets in the marriage. They can't apply strict halacha. So if during the marriage, the couple accumulated, say, $1 million in assets, they give $500,000 to the husband, $500,000 to the wife. While according to halacha, if it was accumulated during marriage, it's not pashut at all that the wife would get, you know, all of those assets. She might get her nifsim mu nifsik tzombazo, maybe if the husband intended to give her a matana, it's a question. She might get a certain percentage, but probably not as much as the chok would entitle her to. So Rav Duchovsky mentioned the following anomaly. Since when they come in front of the Beis Din, we are obligated to apply the secular law of giving her, you know, a much higher amount that she'd be entitled to according to halacha, plus the husband is obligating himself to the ksuva, which we're going to have to apply as well. Therefore, all these people are putting these nice high amounts in the ksuva, doing themselves a disservice. They should put the minimal possible amount. That's the sentiment that led him to that psak that we just read. So from our perspective, we would think if it's a year's support that you'd be going up rather than going down. You know, usually that would be the result in an American medicine. But he's recommending sort of this notion of putting minimal amounts in the ksuva because the wife's going to get her full amount from all the assets that are being divided up anyway. I'll just read to you a little bit excerpt. Hakol tov v'yafe lo nichsei mishpachim mischakon fi dina de gemara. Everything would be fine and good. Tov v'yafe means fine and good. Laval sashir laval isa sashir leisha kasher yesh no hevdom nichsei milug nichsei mitzom bazel kasher yuvdu an esachim mitzom bazel and so forth. Or metzias mishpata shalano. Everything's going to be divided 50-50. Some doesn't matter whether she brought in the money to him, or whether the assets are in his name or her name, she should have got with 50%. She's got to get 50% net, and the buyer is going to receive 50%, what he calls brutto. He's going to receive a 50% plus a reduction. Okay, in other words, he's going to get 50% minus, because he also has to pay the extra ksuba, all right? Then he quotes the machlokis about how much is the kukim are and so forth, okay? The kamis areres osabaya, well, even if you don't have the extra amounts written into the ksuba, and just as the kukim are kashir tagia eis pekudo, when the time comes to adjudicate the divorce, the ksuba zos tovli de gebiya, yilke baba kiflayim, he's going to get whipped twice. Rishis next hamishpacha yischaklu shavu b'shavu etim l'chok. He's going to have to pay 50-50. Shenis and osvah goes in addition to all that. He's talking shalom ksuva misikum v'pala me'od. He's going to have to pay all these extra amounts in the ksuva. Ve'ainli sofek shaldas came l'chayav l'chiyav abal tasim ksuva misikum gavoh. Was never the intention of the husband. So therefore he's already explaining shayla shayla b'sitzis v'chayim isi chayav lomar. So therefore he has an obligation to say prat b'chum atzim 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 for young men who are about to get married. That very often they are mispasim, they are seduced to just make, because of the simcha of the occasion, some kind of gematria for the amount that they're going to put in the ksuva, like the gematria of their names. Do not turn the ksuva into gematrios. Just like you don't write checks for based on gematrias, I'll take the ksuva if you gematria. Do not write your ksuva for based on gematrias. At the end of the day, what's going to end up happening? Won't help you. The dimyan ki yadua engavu ve'esha osot tivu mispar shikmai imakam shal ksuva l'shom asasikam amole, that you can put in really, really astronomical amounts that can end up hurting you, okay? So therefore, and finally he says that the huan akuda hikarish and yotzi l'hait leipa b'churim, the main thing I want to tell the b'churim is im ben kach hanisachem hum nisfag min b'nei ashilug b'shavi b'shavi. The chasim are going to get split 50-50 anyway. Ara koma shi nasim lisha yingas v'chamisha machuzim shel abal. That's all going to whatever he extra amounts is going to give is going to be in addition to what the woman gets anyway. Shlodav alchivim achem shemutam alot. He's going to have to pay her ridiculous amounts. The nusach of the ksuva nowadays should only have a very, very small amount. Lo be'ikik ksuva bovad, not only in the ikik ksuva, which is, of course, very low anyway, but even with the extra amount that we put in as well. And if you want a gematria, he says, put in, you know, a maximum of pa'mayim chai or something like that. Or chai alokim. You know, you put $18,000, okay, so that's... not going to destroy you the way that, you know, $50,000 or $18,000 excuse me, would be like $5,000. But one has to be very careful. Then he quotes, you know, the pasuk in Yeshaya and so forth. So the way that it plays out is that a person, by putting in the ksuba amounts, if they're subjected to a system of adjudication upon divorce, which is secular in orientation anyway, and then the ksuba also gets applied, it'll end up being a tremendous stira. Now, this is not a problem that we have in America. Because in America, if they go to the secular courts, they're not collecting the ksuba. The only time that the ksuba ends up coming into play in America is if the people come in front of the Beis Din. If they're coming in front of the Beis Din and they say that they want to apply secular law, they can make a tznai shel mamon, so then the Beis Din's not going to deal with the ksuba. If they say that that they want halacha to be applied, then the Beis Din will apply the ksuba, but they won't have the other problems of having an inequitable distribution of the assets based on secular law being applicable. But as Rav Moshe writes, and this is very, very important, Rav Moshe writes that lemaiseh, it doesn't end up becoming applicable in ruba deruba of cases. And why is that? And that's really based on the principle which is articulated by the Ramah in Siman Samach Vav Sif Yimel, which is the Ramah makes a suggestion, which is an absolutely astounding, almost heretical sounding suggestion, which is the Ramah says, you know why we need a ksuba? We need a ksuba when a man had the ability to divorce his wife against her will. If he could divorce his wife against her will, so then we needed a ksuva in order to discourage him from doing so because they have to pay a certain amount of money before he'd be able to divorce her. Chaim and Rabbeinu Gershom came along. Rabbeinu Gershom said, you're not allowed to divorce your wife against your will, so then every single divorce is going to have to be negotiated anyway. So therefore he says, you know what, I think you can do away with the ksuva. But then, he said, no, I'm not making it up. Let me read this to you. This is the Ramah Sif Gimel, right? I hope it was copied. Yeah, it's the page 5 in the Ramah, right? Fayein, 3 lines from the bottom, 5 lines from the end, 5 words from the end of the line. Fayein, the command, Siman Kufayin Zayin. The Mokum, Shein, Magash, Rak, Marotz, and Isha. Those places where a woman can't be divorced against her will, namely all of us, after Chayim, the Remainu, Gershom, ain't talking to Ksuva. You don't write a Ksuva. Him came as modern Zem, Dino Zelo, Shein, Magash, and Bal Kokosh, Lisha, Vishim, Chayim, the Remainu, Gershom, Flush, Inspire. Hey, Efshel, Hakik, Ksiva, Ksuva. Who needs a Ksuva? Leave it alone. The whole ksuba business. Aval ain't a minig here. I'm minig not there. So Ramah writes, okay, but the minig is we still have the ksuba, but really you could have done one way with the ksuba altogether. So Tokas Mechokik and others all, you know, scream and cry. What do you mean? You could have done away with the ksuba. Yeah, there are still cases where it's, you know, certainly for Namona, that's not, you know, it has nothing to do with divorcing Baal Korcha, not divorcing Baal Korcha. Or even if you can't divorce a woman Baal Korcha, there are cases where it's a Benzina. The woman, you know, the woman has the right to force the husband to divorce her because of the way that he's acting, in which case she's entitled to the ksuba. Those cases where you can force the woman to get divorced, presumably she's forfeited her ksuba. But, you know, but there's still plenty of cases that you can imagine. But Rav Moshe really writes very similarly. You look in Igros Moshe, the beginning of Siman Tzadi Aleph, okay? The beginning of... okay. Hinemi Eis Bitzel HaMadbeis Kama B'chola Olam Tzadi Aleph, the first paragraph. We only know from dollars. Nobody knows how much a ksuva is. Come on, let's be honest. We call it 10 shittos. Now you heard of 10 shittos. You have any idea how much it's worth? They did not view, they did not look into this at all. But the reason why it is not looked into at all is because it's not a lachol ma'aseh. Because since you can't divorce a wife against her will, so therefore whoever wants to get, they negotiate, they work things out. And even if you're dealing with an almana, most of them, there's a will that they'd rather live by. And they file din in the machusa, they get 50% of the estate, much better than a ksuva. So those few times, when's it going to come up? It'll come up. You have a couple that comes to Beis Din Tov and they say, we want you to be done on the ksuva. All right, so for those few times that it comes up, they didn't really look into it. They make a compromise. And that is why, so I will, you know, mention what I think about the real value of the ksuva, but it very rarely ever comes up for all of these reasons. Okay.
I think Rabbi Weiss mentions in fourth year halacha l'maisa that if you're missing your ksuva instead of writing the ksuva the irkasa, you could just give her a check worth the value of the ksuba temporarily until...
That's a separate inyan of, ksuba the erkasa. There's some who want to tiny and look in the Yotzer HaPotkim that you could be makel on ksuba the erkasa bisman as they're based on the svar of the Ramah. You don't require a ksuba, but maybe ksuba the erkasa. If you had a ksuba, but you lost it, so maybe you can be makel. But it's rejected. By the majority of poskim rejected. But there is such an etza which is born in the Yotzer, in the Yotzer HaPotkim. There may be more room to be makel in terms of... allowing people to live together, at least until they're able to do an iksuva derekasa. You know, there may be more room to be made. So, you look at our article in the Tzachumen, we have all kinds of footnotes in which we give, 5 different bases to be mekel without actually being mekel. You know, the more we run each case. but there may be a basis. There's a little bit of a discussion about that, all right? all right. And similarly, Rav Moshe writes similar lashon in the in Siman Tzadi Beis as well. Let me see if I can find it. All right, it's not necessary. Basically, it's the same. He just says it in different words. Hold on. He basically just writes that it only really becomes relevant when they're bar lefanenu bedin, and they ask us explicitly to apply the ksuva. Now, Chaim Zimbalist, who used to be a retired dayan, I believe, in the Bezdin Agudah of Rabbanei in Israel, wrote in a tshuva to the Bezdin, when Rabbi Willig at some point wrote a shaila to a few of the Rabbanim, Rav Zalman Nechem Yigolberg, Rav Chaim Zimbalist, their opinion on the subject. So Rav Chaim Zimbalist responded, Rav Zalman Nechem Yigolberg responded. Chaim Zimbalist responded, basically, he follows the party line, Yad Baal Shtal HaTachton. If you're going to evaluate the ksuva, you get the minimal amount, which would be, as we pointed out, very, very little, like four times the Yikr ksuva. But then he writes that it could be that in America there's a separate consideration, which is that there's a koach haminug. And you can argue that America is the makom of Rav Moshe Feinstein. In other words, it's the makom that we filed the minhagim and the psakim of Rav Moshe because he was the posik for America. So since Rav Moshe Feinstein, the 100 pounds of silver, so he writes, b'derech pshara, that since the notion is, as Rav Moshe writes, that we make a pshara, so the appropriate pshara to make, if a bezin is going to be done with respect to the ksuva, would be to follow Rav Moshe's shita. So I think Lamaisa, that probably has been the approach that the bezin has followed during those occasions where people have come to us in order to evaluate the ksuva, where a din Torah is presented before us for these purposes to evaluate on the basis of Rav Moshe, as sort of the minhag American. Rav Zalman Nechem Yigolberg has a different etzah, which is that since there is such a sibuch about exactly how much a ksuva is worth, so the best etzah in terms of the actual enforceability of the ksuva, if it's going to be enforced, as Rav Zalman Nechem, is to write dollars into the ksuva, just like the minhag Sfardim is to write actual amounts. People should write an actual dollar amount to be mechayev themselves in terms of an actual dollar amount in the ksuva itself. This is on some level the basis for some of the provisions in the prenuptial agreement that we have promulgated at the Bezdin of America, which is that it takes certain obligations that are really obligations of the ksuva. If you think about it, the ksuva doesn't only have this masayim zukukim amount upon divorce, but it also says, Ve'ezin mafanis lichidei, I'm going to support you, I'm going to nourish you during our marriage. There are vague, unquantified support obligations that are applicable during marriage that exist in the ksuva, but the problem is that they have no, there's no quantification, there's no way to determine exactly what an appropriate amount would be. One of the benefits of the prenuptial agreement is that it quantifies it, it puts in an actual amount and makes it clear that it is this is intended to be an enforceable, practical document. You know, in a separate Bezdin Rabbani decision, which I included in the supplementary materials that I have, we don't have time to read it inside. There is a separate decision, I think also from Rav Duchovsky, from an earlier period in time, in which Rav Duchovsky also points out that when it comes to the signing of the Hebrew Ksuva, the fact of the matter is that most people don't take the amount seriously at all. And even though we generally hold somebody responsible for a document that they sign, because there's a klal, there's a halacha that whenever, also born in Siman Samach Lamed Tzif Yud Gimel, then Amar's would say, I don't know what I'm signing. He's a grown man and he's held responsible for what he's signing. But he just writes, I'll read it. The Ulam Baraka Asher Anan Sadi, She'e Megalim HaChasen Klal, it's an Anan Sadi that we don't reveal to the Chasen at all, as sod ha-zikukim, the secret of the zikukim, of how much they're worth. Or v'der klah ha-rabbe eidim ma'atzim v'kim zan, the rabbi m'sagir is like, yeah, they have no idea what it's talking about. Ein makom l'chayev z'chosim ha-shalo l'klah al-daito. How can you possibly obligate the chosim to something that he has no clue what it's talking about? Asikim ha-yachad sh'agav ha-shalom 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 is the amount that's written at the end of the ksuva in the Israeli ksuvas in the shkolim, v'raka gabav, v'chosim iskhaya v'kinyam isulo. And that is all, in his opinion, that the chosin is responsible for. This is Psak Din Rabbani, I don't have the number on me, I'll get it to you. I only excerpted the last few pages of the Psak. It's from Tavshin Meme, it's from about 20 years ago. As we see, based on the evolving nature of Israeli law, Rav Duchovsky's own view on the subject has evolved somewhat, but this is also a very serious consideration I have in the materials.
What you just read, what page is that on?
It's on the supplementary materials.
Yeah, which page?
I don't know. I didn't number the pages, but on the top it's 308. Okay? 308 on the top. Now, I have in the supplementary material sort of a case that affirms this general notion. How is this? Page 2, page 3, wait. All right, these weren't copied in order, were they? This is the case of the estate of Armin White versus Zlota White. Armin and Zlota. Okay, page 41 of your material. What happened here? 41, I think, is the material. What happened here? A couple guys. Wait, is this 49? Oh, it's 49. It looks like a 1, but it's really a 9.
Yeah
okay. So, in this particular case, 1974 New York case, a couple got married. Before they got married, they executed a prenuptial agreement. The prenuptial agreement said that the wife waived all rights that she might have to elect to take against the will of the husband. I guess on that basis, he married her. He said, I'll marry you if, you know, you prove to me that you're not a gold digger. So she signed this document, and then he died, and she tried to figure out how to get the money. So she had signed this document, which said she waived all of her rights, but after she signed this document, there was another document. What was that document? They got married in a religious ceremony. It was a ksuva. So she argued, well, it's true, I signed away all my rights, but then he obligated himself to the ksuva afterwards, so the ksuva supersedes, and therefore I'm entitled to all the rights of an amana under the ksuva. So the court considered this question, take a look there. The pertinent parts of the ksuva provide for the payments of the respondent in view of thy widowhood of 100 zuzim, and that this obligation shall pass to the decedent's estate. Respondent contends that these provisions abrogate the prenuptial agreement, that zuzim have no monetary value of any kind, but represent the intestate share to which the widow would be entitled under the secular law. In support of this construction, the surviving spouse submits an affidavit of none other than Rabbi Josiah Derby, who officiated at the marriage ceremony in question. He states that the ksuva was read to both the decedent and the surviving spouse, and while read in Aramaic, the decedent clearly understood the contents of the ksuva. Most importantly, he states at page 4 of his affidavit, the ksuva in this case, having been executed in today's times, must necessarily be interpreted under today's laws and applying the Jewish legal axiom, the law of the land is the law, dina de machus adina, which is funny, because Rav Moshe, as we saw in his shuva in Siman Tzadi Aleph, said, Armana doesn't usually take her share. Why? Because they usually follow dina de machus, not so far off. The Jewish law says that the widow is entitled to that which the law of the land, New York State, allows her. That is Jewish law, Dutch state. Then I need to find the continuation of this decision, which,
Page 50.
Page 50 is the continuation, all right. Petitioner, on the other hand, contends that assuming the agreement is in any way binding, the decedent's only obligation under the agreement was to provide its widow with 100 zuzim, and since she got 200 shares of Occidental Petroleum Corporation and other things, it probably covers 100 zuzim. All right. It is the opinion of this court, after giving particular consideration to the above quote from Ari Derby's affidavit, that the Ksuva Jewish marriage contract has no binding effect on the property rights of the signers under the laws of the state of New York. Okay, and then he quotes approvingly from George Horowitz, who says as follows, in modern times, especially in the more civilized countries where the law of the land protects married women with respect to their property rights, the Ksuva as the bond of indebtedness has become almost obsolete. Certainly, when the amount of that bond is merely the ancient statutory minimum of 200 zuz, valued at about $30, actually 200 nowadays, but okay, it is not 300, right? It is not taken seriously as the burden or charge on the husband's estate. Moreover, practically nowhere does the Lord land the courts for the rabbinical ksuba with the force of a lien on the husband's property, real or personal. That's a separate issue. I don't know about that. Thus, even for the observant and the orthodox, the ksuba has become more a matter of form and a ceremonial document than a legal obligation. The ksuba in our time serves to make the marriage a religious ceremony rather than a mere civil contract. It recalls also ancient and hallowed memories of a time when the Jews constantly blah, blah, blah. All right, so the bottom line is that the court itself is cognizant that if you present a document, Zuzim and Sukukim, you're going to have a hard time enforcing the document. If a ksuva does have very specific provisions that are quantified and are spelled out with specificity, then I gave you I'm not going to quote from it, a Victor v. Victor case, or something like that, which has various provisions that say in it, where the court upholds the notion, or appears to, that if a ksuva would have very specific provisions, then it could be enforceable. And in fact, there have been other cases where not the zukukim themselves have been enforced, but other notions of the ksuva contract have been enforced. Where, for example, the famous Avitzor v. Avitzor case, where there was an English language ksuva that said if the parties ever have a dispute, they will submit to joint to binding arbitration before such and such bezdin, where the court said that is completely binding because, you know, it's clearly written, it was in a language everyone understood, the parties clearly, you know, signed it and so forth. By the same token, enforceability of the document, you know, even for secular purposes in this country, would probably, in the way that the document is drafted right now, one would be better off having a supplementary document which clearly state or have an English translation version of the ksuba document. That's what Rabbi Moshe David Tenlin does, for example, when he officiates. He has an English version of the ksuba document, which spells out with more particularity the actual provisions and the actual amount of the obligation. In his, I looked it over because I have it. I got married with such a document. I looked it over last night. No idea what. I look at it. So it says that that the husband obligates himself to the greater of the amount of money written in the ksuba, or 100 pounds of the value of 100 pounds of silver. Not surprisingly, following the view of Ramosha, but there you have a quantifiable amount. And by the same token, if one of the goals and one of the bonuses of the prenuptial agreement, again, is that you have an English language document which quantifies the support obligation of the husband, that he's obligated to pay such and such amount in order to support his wife every single day, so that you have an amount which is enforceable, and you have a provision that says the parties are obligated to submit before a bezin for adjudication of their disputes. So you have a proper forum and you have a proper quantifiable obligation that a bezin would be able to apply. But otherwise, in terms of the practicalities, what ends up happening, and if you want a little bit more of how the notions of the ksuva and the purposes of the ksuva sort of tie in with prenuptial agreement, I have a reprint of my article from Viewpoints magazine on the prenuptial agreement, Love with Security, which is republished in your materials. But in terms of the actual application of the ksuva, the zuzim and sukukim, as they are currently written, if they do come to adjudication, could be subject to different opinions. According to the Bezdin, according to Ravadi Yosef of Yosef Kapach, you say Yad Baal Ashtar HaTachton. According to a Chaim Zimbalist, you would say in America, follow Minog America, that you have the 100 pounds of silver. According to the Beis Avi of Yitzchak Libes and the latest decision of Yishlomo Dukhovsky, it's appropriate for Bezdin to take into account the one-year standard that the Masayim Zuz, one-year support standard that the Masayim Zuz was supposed to represent, based on the Mishnah in Peah. And according to Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, it's appropriate to avoid any kinds of misunderstandings or any kind of lack of ambiguity by putting in, like they do in Israel, an actual shkolim amount in the ksuva, an actual dollar amount in our ksuva, and perhaps having a supplementary English document to make the amount very clear, as well as any other provisions that should be clear ala the prenuptial agreement. And of course, the minhag is, as stated in the Pesachei Choshen, if you take a look, page 40 of the materials, Take a look in footnote Yud Beis, about eight lines down, eight words into the line or so. Ulamaisa. Loni Spirali Eknoigim. Piskei Choshen himself, you know, is the author of the Bris Yehuda. The Piskei Choshen is probably the most, you know, comprehensive and referenced work in Dine Mominus that exists up to date, that is quoted regularly in Bezdin decisions as well. Ulamaisa, Loni Spirali Eknoigim. So he himself, after looking at all the shitas, said it's very difficult to have any kind of clear indication of the minug, of a minug, with respect to the amount of the ksuba. El shekvar kasafti shekemat b'chol mikre shel gerushin la'osim cheshbon lefi ha'alacha. Except one thing that appears to emerge as the common minug, namely the b'chol mikre shel gerushin la'osim cheshbon lefi ha'alacha. Okay, good. One consistency is nobody follows halacha. El lefamim baratzon. But rather, sometimes willingly and voluntarily, and sometimes after much strife and controversy, because divorces aren't always pleasant, unfortunately. What people generally do is a pshara, negotiate a settlement. Even with respect to the ksuvas amana, they don't make very precise cheshbonos. And generally speaking, they give up in favor of their wife, their mother, excuse me. You know, a husband dies, then the money would generally go to the children. So we often have people coming into our Bezdin, especially if the decedent was in Israel, to sign these Yerusha waiver forms, where they waive any rights they would have in the estate in favor of their mother. And even if they're not a children, everyone should make a pshara. Generally, the best approach for all matters, not only this, but practically speaking, the way that it works and why the ksuva doesn't generally get collected, is because people usually make a pshara. It comes up in the get process at the end of every single get. This is part of all the neschos of the get. See the gerushin, when it comes time for the woman to receive the get, what's the last question that you ask the woman? You ask her, obviously, if she's agreeing to accept the get of your own free will, but you say, do you have any claims with respect to the ksuva? Okay, so I think one of the Masadik Yushas, in all of his years, Masadik Gittin, in all of his years, he's never ever seen, you know, hundreds and hundreds of cases, a woman ever say, yes, I'm making a claim with respect to my ksuva. Generally speaking, the parties have settled their differences between the lawyers, between themselves, in mediation. They've settled one way or the other, and there really is not an intention, by and large, in most cases, of women mizmanin zed to collect the ksuva. We've had svardim from Israel in our bezdin with ksuvos that say things like $3 million, you know, and so forth. And when we point it out, because I feel it's my duty to point it out before, you know, she waves the ksuva, you ask that question so that nobody will claim that they only accepted the get because they expected a certain type of monetary settlement and they didn't get it. So this is in order to make sure there's no tonight with respect to the get. So I remember, you know, just bringing up, you know, you have a ksuva worth $3 million. And, you know, and the woman, you know, the Israeli woman looked at her Israeli, you know, husband, and they cracked up, you know. It's fortunate for him that she cracked up because, you know, he could have really, you know, cracked apart, you know, with the amount that was written in the ksuva. But generally speaking, lemaise, people usually waive the amounts of the ksuva, or in those rare cases where Rav Moshe writes, they want to, you know, be done in front of a Bezdin. So then a Bezdin would have to take all of these different shikulim, all of these different considerations into account. There's an interesting, I'll just end with this, in your materials, I didn't get around to quoting it, it's relevant to the, there are two things I didn't get around to. One is the sma, which really ties in with the notion that sometimes amounts of coinage are relative to the day that you live in or the times that you're living in. The famous sma that says that for purposes of kiddushin, for example, a puta might not be valued as a puta anymore, that bismanenu, that a puta doesn't buy you anything. It could be that you need more than a puta to get married, and that a puta wouldn't cut it anymore. That, you know, maybe the coinages vary based on what their buying power is in various places. And the other is sort of the issue of, is there a possibility when we do have Dine Torah and the husband alleges that the wife should lose her ksuva because she's a moredit, how relevant is the claim of moredit bismanet there? Well, I have a chew of Ramosha, you're probably wondering why it's in there, just based on an aside where Ramosha basically indicates that the issue of Moredis only really works if the husband himself is Nika Ishmael, and if he himself is, you know, a tzaddik, but otherwise Moredis isn't really applicable. And one of the Beis and Rabbani cases, I'm not sure if I included also from Rav Duchovsky, I think it's in the supplementary materials, Also, I'm not sure if I included it or not. It's Yud Beis. It's in Chelek Yud Beis. I think Reish Nun Gimel. Has a very interesting proposition that it's that Moredis is not applicable in a case where the husband only alleges Moredis all the terrible things the wife has done at the point that he wants to get divorced. Because Moredis is only applicable if the husband wants to stay in the marriage and the wife is the one who wants out of the marriage. But if they both want out of the marriage, then claims of Moredis are not really applicable. So Lemaisa, the notion of forfeiting a ksuba based on Moredis is, although it can come up every so often, in many different cases where you might think that it would come up, it would be dispelled based on these other various considerations. So I think our time is up. I think I covered what we needed to cover, and it's a pleasure speaking to you.
Shekel to a Zelda.
I have.